Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. The President of the United States today officially opens the New York World's Fair. More than 5,000 invited guests are seated on the platform back of the President. And before us in the great plaza known as the Court of Peace are some 35,000 more. And then crowded into every other bit of space are tens of thousands more who've come today to hear and see the President and to get their first view of this great exposition which has as its theme the world of tomorrow. 150 years ago today, April 30th, 1939, George Washington took the oath of office as first President of the United States. The World's Fair of 1939 commemorates this historic event. The President left his home at Hyde Park this morning at 10 o'clock, coming by train to New York City, and thence by motor to the fairgrounds. He has been guest of honor at a luncheon in the Federal Building with the Honorable Edward J. Flynn, United States Commissioner General for the Fair, as his host. Also in attendance at the luncheon were 350 or more dignitaries, including envoys and commissioners general of the 63 participating nations as guests. We've now received word that the President has left the luncheon room and is expected to arrive here in just a few moments. Meanwhile, to tell you from what he can see from his vantage point at the back of this huge platform, we turn you over to announcer George Hicks.
We're speaking now from a special radio booth within the giant speaker's platform. These are the formal opening day ceremonies of the New York World's Fair. Hundreds and thousands of people have flowed through the gates this morning. The gigantic panorama that spreads around us now, the white and gleaming buildings of the 63 foreign nations, thousands of troops, people of foreign nations in their native costumes who have been in the parade, are now seated before the President's box and speaker's platform. The sailors, the Marines, the Army, massed in military formation, standing about the great court of peace. Behind us, the fairy-like feathery fountains, standing out of the huge lagoon behind the audience, the wind now drifting their mist like mist in the early morning over a river. The flags of the nations twisting in the breeze. The day is beautiful, warm and mild, fluffy clouds moving through the sky. Overhead, the planes have been turning. Two blimps have been circling over the entire fair. The giant speaker's stand is seating the sections of the Foreign Diplomatic Corps, the United States House of Representatives, placards over each section, the United States Senate, and then there are many thousands of other distinguished guests. Facing the stand from which the President of the United States will speak are two large upright stands holding photographers, newsreel cameras, and at the corner of the stand we see the new microphone of today and of tomorrow, the iconoscope television camera of RCA and NBC, officially opening today television, the new entertainment for the world of tomorrow, and sending pictures of this colorful scene out over the air at this moment. Behind the stands is the Federal Building, sheer white, windowless stone sides, two shoulders jutting up into the sky, two giant gold American eagles set against their faces, in simple printing, the words peace on one face, unity on the other. As we look about now, the flags of all these nations from their building tops, beyond them we see further spires and towers of other foreign nations, the Soviet Union building with its workers' statue at the top standing high into the sky, the Belgian tower with its carillon tower latticed-like with the bells within. Then there's the great British building on the other side of pink smooth stone. Beyond it, the French pavilion of curved glass, its whole face. And then on the right side, the Italian building, a statue of Italia at the top and water cascading down the terraced face of the whole building. Trumpeters have been placed at the tops of the halls of nations, standing in their medieval costumes of mail with trumpets at their sides to formulate and salute the different ceremonies of the day. Buildings with their names on them facing this court of peace: Iceland, Albania, Greece, Yugoslavia, Finland, Switzerland, Siam, Turkey are some of the names that we read against their white facades. And over each of them is the color of its nation. The trilon and the perisphere directly down the wide mall from the 35,000 seated before us, tree-lined, the perisphere with its helicline, a serpentine-like walk that leads down from it, black with people watching the ceremony from that distance. Behind the Lagoon of Nations and its fountains, a huge white statue facing toward the future, in his colonial army cape, the figure of George Washington. Along the tree-lined mall are four white statues, four figures, entitled the Four Freedoms: freedom of speech, of press, assembly, religion. All the members, the thousands who have been in the parade, have now been seated in the center of the great group facing the speaker's platform. They look directly at the federal building, its two shoulders at each side. In the center, square towers, pillars supporting the lower roof, backed by a crimson-like wall. And printed there in heavy gold are these words: "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." Senators, governors, diplomats, consuls, congressmen, in their silk hats, their afternoon dress, are now standing, all standing, as the distinguished guests are entering the speaker's platform. We turn you to Carlton Smith in the president's box.
We're speaking to you again from the president's box. To our left, quite a number of members of the president's cabinet. We see the Attorney General of the United States, the Honorable Frank Murphy, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, William B. Bankhead and Mrs. Bankhead, Secretary of Labor Perkins, Secretary of Agriculture Wallace, Mrs. Woodrow Wilson, also just to the left of the president's box. In the president's box itself, Mayor Fiorello H. LaGuardia, Mayor of New York, Governor Lehman of New York, Mr. Grover Whalen now, greeting Mrs. Franklin D. Roosevelt, who has just come in to the rear. Following Mrs. Roosevelt are her daughter-in-law, Mrs. James Roosevelt, the other members of the president's party, his naval aide and new Secretary General Edwin M. Watson, his naval aide, Captain Daniel J. Callahan. We do not see at the moment the president's mother, although she has come down to New York to be with her distinguished son today, and we expect that she'll be along in this procession in just a moment. The Postmaster General of the United States, James A. Farley, comes forward now and gives a hearty handshake to Mayor LaGuardia. Mrs. Roosevelt now having a few words with the mayor of New York City, and Mr. Whalen, the president of the New York World's Fair. Mr. Whalen will preside over these exercises this afternoon and introduce as the first speaker the mayor of New York. Then there will be music with the well-known Westminster Choir of Princeton, and following the music, Governor Herbert H. Lehman of New York will speak. The next speaker will be Sir Louis Beale, Commissioner General for Great Britain for the World's Fair, representing all nations participating in the exposition. The President of the United States will deliver the principal and final address of the afternoon. Now the members of the President
of the United States.
There's the announcement over the public address system of the arrival of the President of the United States. And he comes now from the rear of the federal building. In the background, over the public address system, music, music, greeting the president. We can't quite see him yet. He has not come around the corner and into view of the president's box, from which point we are speaking to you now. Here he comes, ladies and gentlemen, riding in his open car, the president, and with him, Edward J. Flynn, United States Commissioner for the Fair, coming along now in the automobile and up to the ramp immediately in front of the box, from which point he will speak just a little later. The president's 84-year-old mother riding in the rear of the car with him. He's doffed his high silk hat. He's dressed formally, of course. Doffed his high silk hat and waving it to the crowd. Now he comes into view of the people here in the stands behind him, and the entire assembly out in front of him stand at attention, saluting the President of the United States. Mrs. Sarah Delano Roosevelt, the President's mother, now alighting from the automobile, following John Roosevelt, who has gotten out just ahead of his father. She comes forth now and walks into the box through the open gate, and behind her, the President of the United States with his son, John. Mr. Whalen standing now ready to greet the president and escort him to the big leather chair in which he will be seated until it comes time for him to speak. In just a few moments, we're to hear the musical honors for the President of the United States, played by the United States Army Band, marking the official opening of this ceremony, which is the official opening of the 1939 World's Fair in New York City. The scattered applause of the people, the few people here in the box, greets the president, and now he has taken his place. The honors for the president, the flourishes, the ruffles, the national anthem. We now present the Honorable Grover Whalen, President of the New York World's Fair.
Mr. President, distinguished guests, distinguished representatives of many nations, ladies and gentlemen, that the world of tomorrow might not catch us unawares, we have seen fit to create the New York World's Fair as an adventure along the frontiers of progress and world understanding. On opening day, April 30th, 1939, we have here within the confines of a mere 1,216 acres a fabulous display of works representing man's highest accomplishments. Small wonder then that the moment is one of deepest solemnity as we gather here for a moment of benediction upon what has been done, and with a prayer in our hearts for what can be done. These have been called mere magic acres. We are here to regard them as modern acres, expressive not only of the scintillating minds of America as projected into tomorrow, but as an expression for almost all of the world that the hopes and the aspirations of America are in no way different from those of the rest of the world. We have on these grounds the assurance that the equipment and knowledge of today, when aligned by and with man's better nature, constitutes the only alliance upon which divine providence will smile and lend spiritual aid. Let our chief concern be, therefore, that the greatest possible number of persons see and come to know what has been wrought here. These works around about us shall speak for themselves. Their money cost has been great, but it is not their money cost that makes them great. Rather, is it that they represent almost the sum total of all that man has produced since history began. that they sample the best of man's creative talent, that they spring from the surge within him towards betterment of existing conditions, and that they lend concrete evidence of faith in the future and of courage to go on in the face of many doctrines of futility. Let these very ceremonies in the Court of Peace, by which the President of the United States will officially open the International Exposition, the fair is the expression of many minds and the work of many hands of 60 nations. On behalf of the exposition, innumerable men and women of all nations, creeds, colors, and stations of life have given their best. Young people built this fair, people young in spirit, and the faith and courage of youth. They have dared to adventure along the frontiers of modern thought, modern production, and modern science, which takes the place of the geographic frontiers known to our forefathers. Many a man is ready to admit that with the building of the fair, he is grown in mental and spiritual stature. Let any man who has directly or indirectly taken part in the creation of this exposition say to himself, "Of the fair I am proud, but I am more proud that I was not one of those who said it couldn't be done." The New York World's Fair was conceived by the men and women of the city whose name it bears. It was caught up by the American people as providing expression for the past 150 years of their endeavor and their ideals for the years to come. Because there is contagion in the vitality and ideals of the American people, the nations of the world, in turn, accepted the New York World's Fair as the means of fostering a philosophy of unselfishness, which alone can bring to us an era of prosperity, happiness, and harmony among men. Thus it is that we meet here today as a Congress of Nations intent upon the progress of the world. Even on the opening day of the fair, it is obvious that the exposition is a stimulant administered to world thought of conscientious and scientific development of all man's economic and social resources. The fair demonstrates the world's willingness to develop higher standards of individual living and all the potentials of world peace. The fair represents the need man has for constructive work to occupy his mind and hands. And let it be remembered that when man does not build, he destroys, if only time. Never in the history of the world has there been a more hopeful picture than the one presented here during the past year. These acres have seen no strife. They have seen exemplary cooperation among individuals, among industries, among nations, among states. And if the buildings, exhibits, and surroundings be considered as lessons or words, they are words to take with all seriousness. For behind them are the ideals and prayers of 90% of the globe's population. The fair faces the rising sun. We have not been unaware of what has taken place in the world or what is taking place in the world. To us was entrusted the vision of an international exposition that might turn the course of humanity into an easier high road. We look deep into human history, less for precedent than for guidance along new ways. If we found it necessary to violate many precedents, we did so with the sure knowledge that in that violation lay the true progress. We look back through 150 years of progress in business, in industry, the arts, and social life, not merely to commemorate that period, but that we might build more wisely towards the future. We have made tremendous strides since George Washington was inaugurated first President of the United States. But we should not rest content on our laurels of the moment. We shall go forward if we but maintain our faith and courage and hold to the high ideals that have guided us in the past. 3 years ago, when the theme of the New York World's Fair was first promulgated, we announced to the world, gather together the genius and the imagination of the 20th century to formulate replies to the living questions of our age, which clamored for answers from living men and women. The theme, as announced at that early date, continues. And I quote from the theme, "We are convinced that the potential assets, material and spiritual, of our country are such that if readily used, they will make for a general public good such as has never before been known. In order to make its contribution toward that process, the fair will show the most promising development of production, service and social factors of the present day in relation to their bearing on the life of the great mass of the people. Thus, in presenting a new layout for a richer life, the fair will not only predict, but may even dictate the shape of things to come. How well we have carried our trust since these words were written in 1936, the world may judge in 1939. The events of the past 3 years, since that theme was written, have neither tampered with the ideals of the fair nor dampened the ardor of its creator. Rather have they contrived to set the international exposition in perspective by setting it in contrast. The exposition, as opened today, demonstrates the will towards eventual cooperation among nations, using the tools of peace, namely the ways and products of business and industry, of architecture and art, of education and science. The many buildings and exhibits as presented in their splendid surroundings represents a new display technique. It is true, but infinitely beyond that, they represent the new attitude of industries and nations towards the worldwide social obligation. There can be no doubt in the thinking mind about the future. We have in the world today startling examples of the destruction that may be worked by man's will. Fortunate is it indeed, then, that we have here at the New York World's Fair a joyful display of man's nature at work towards the goal of true utility and true beauty. Be these of some such product as a lowly carpet sweeper, or some such lofty concept as a social order typified by peace. Let there be no mistake. There is a choice of path obviously open to us. Who, other than those shackled by pure emotion, can hesitate over taking the high road by which the New York World's Fair is a blueprint drawn by 60 nations in the manner of science, inspirited with humanity? We must not pause long for words at the crossroads, for while words are good, examples are more effective. Let us continue with marketing and using the knowledge we already have. Use of that knowledge will speedily bring us greater knowledge for our avail in what George Washington called the discernment and the pursuit of the public good. The fair commemorates 150 years of Washington's inauguration as first president of the United States. While en route from Mount Vernon to New York City, scene of the inaugural, General Washington was addressed by the trustees and faculty of the University of Pennsylvania. In reply, the president-elect wrote, "I can see hopes that we are at the very eve of a very enlightened era. The same unremitting exertions which under all the blasting storms of war cause the arts and sciences to flourish in America will doubtless bring them nearer to maturity when they shall have been sufficiently invigorated by the milder rays of peace. We have here at the New York World's Fair exhibits and display of our progress towards the maturity mentioned by President Washington. They clearly show that we have kept faith with our Constitution. The accomplishments of a century and a half have been sufficient to inspire creation of an international exposition that shall in turn renew faith, courage, and endeavor for all mankind. We may not rest until the lessons of the New York World's Fair have become examples of the benefits to civilization. Government has played a very important part in the building of this fair. Vision and courage on the part of those in control of the federal, state, and city governments have made possible this fair. Our own chief executive in the city of New York was one of the very founders of the New York World's Fair. One of the men who saw the light and had the great vision of this fair, and was one of a very small group that fostered, encouraged, and urged its incorporation and brought about this great and successful project. It is rather difficult to find words, speaking as I do as the president of the New York World's Fair, to adequately and properly introduce our first speaker. But if I were to search the dictionary, I could not find anything more to say of our great mayor than that he has brought about with his great courage this great sight, and with his cooperation and aid has made possible the New York World's Fair. No higher compliment could be paid to any man than I pay to Fiorello LaGuardia, the mayor of the city of New York.
Mr. President, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the people of the city of New York, I bid you welcome. As the host city, the people extend a cordial invitation to all our neighbors throughout the United States to honor us with a visit to this inspiring fair. Among the many exhibits of science, industry, and commerce, may I point to one exhibit which I hope all visitors from foreign shores will note, and that is the city of New York itself. Not what you will see in the city's exhibit, but our exhibit to the whole world is that in a city of 7.5 million people coming from every land in the country, and children of these people who have come from every country of the world, live here together in peace and harmony. And to that, we claim no secret formula. The idea is neither copyrighted or patented. In fact, we're most unselfish about it, and pray and hope that other countries may copy. All we do is to let every man and woman have a say in their own government, and we've eliminated artificial artificial stimulus of hatred. That New York City's contribution to the World's Fair. And now, Mr. Whalen, please accept the thanks of the man through him of the people of this city to you, board of directors and the engineers and you men out there who built this fair. Our thanks and gratitude. Mr. President, you're always welcome to New York City. In fact, you belong here. And I know that your greatest thrill must have been this morning as you were received by hundreds of thousands of people who awaited your arrival and cheered you on to the way to this fair. We are indeed fortunate and should give thanks that we are living in a country that refuses to admit that out of all the progress that you will find in this fair, it isn't possible for men and women to live properly. Yes, the United States has another exhibit, not necessarily found in the various halls, and that is that in periods where other countries were suffering, we built and constructed and work was found for men and women throughout the United States because of the vision and the courage of the leader of our republic. And for that, Mr. President, accept our thanks. Finally, New York City will welcome our visitors with open arms, not only on the day the opening of the fair, but all through the fair and every day thereafter. The city of today greets the world of tomorrow.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Over 3 years ago, a small group of men visited the governor of the state of New York and asked him if he would join a cross-section of business and industrial and professional men of New York and listen to a proposal for to hold a World's Fair in the city of New York. The governor came, and it was through his enthusiastic approval that the Necessary Enabling Act was put through the legislature, permitting the city of New York to lease this property, which it had originally designed for a park, to the New York World's Fair Corporation to construct a fair thereon. Governor Lehman has been one of our best friends, always helping us whenever we asked for such help. And those were on numerous occasions that we found it necessary to come to the governor, but we never found him wanting. It's a great privilege for me to present His Excellency, the Governor of the State of New York, the Honorable Herbert H. Lehman.
President, Mayor LaGuardia, Your Excellencies, President Whalen, and friends, I am greatly honored in having the privilege of participating today in the dedication of this great fair. My hearty congratulations to you, President Whalen, and to your associates, and to the architects, engineers, and contractors who have carried this work forward to successful consummation. And my particular congratulations and thanks to the thousands of men who have labored with their hands and with their heads for many months to build this great and spectacular exposition. Here we have living proof of the divine blessings of material resources and spiritual strength which have been granted to our people. On these grounds, there are exhibited the fruits of our industry, of our mines, and of our laboratories. But on every hand, there is symbolized something far more precious, more typical of America: our faith in our own destiny and our confidence in our future. Men elsewhere may doubt the days that lie ahead. Here we accept adversity with hopeful and confident hearts. Our nation was born in struggle and in sacrifice. It is not new for our people to surmount obstacles and bring order out of chaos, and we shall do so again. 150 years ago, on this very day, the first president of the United States was inaugurated in this city. His illustrious successor, the 32nd in the line of presidents, is here with us today. It is a young nation that has had only 32 rulers. It is virile and imaginative, capable and resourceful. And free men everywhere look towards our land for leadership and for guidance. And Mr. President, we are proud that in these dangerous days, they have not looked in vain. It is almost unbelievable, standing amidst this great pageant of material progress, that there are yet hidden from man two great secrets of the social relationship in which men must live with each other. One is the secret of how to distribute the fruits of the field, of the mill, of the laboratory, so that all may have a sufficiency of the goods of the world, goods for which they are willing to exchange the toil of their hands and the sweat of their brows. The other is the secret of living together in understanding and in friendship, in tolerance and in goodwill. I pray that someday, in the world of tomorrow, these secrets too will be revealed to us. It is not too hopeful to believe that the day will come when we will build a world in which men of all nations, of all races, of all creeds, will seek to help their neighbors, not to harm them. A world of which the keystone will be justice, equality, and tolerance. A world in which right will ever be the master of might. This fair will bring to our state a great army of visitors from every other state in the Union and from every other country on the face of the globe. We will learn from them, and I hope they may learn something from us. The exchange of ideas and views which come when people meet in cordial relationship will inevitably lead to a more sympathetic understanding of each other's philosophies and problems. The fair, I am certain, will bring a clearer realization of our resources and hopes and ideals as a nation. It will bring to our millions of visitors a better appreciation of the part that New York City and New York State play in the economic and social life of the nation. The citizens of the state of New York are a hospitable people. They will seek during the months of the fair to show our visitors that New York wants nothing in her own self-interest, which is against the interest of other peoples. We in this state believe that our larger interests lie with every other part of the nation. This momentous undertaking has been conceived with broad vision and has been executed with singular and signal success. It will be the means of demonstrating that all parts of our country are linked in a common interest, and that what affects the happiness and the prosperity of one part affects the happiness and prosperity of all. We of New York want to share with the rest of the nation and with the world whatever is good in our life and in our experience. We want to know what people in other parts of the country have done so that we in turn can profit by their experience and their achievements. We will eagerly welcome to the state of New York all those who do us honor by coming to us from our own country and from abroad. And I can promise you that they will be received by the people of the state of New York with heartfelt cordiality, and that in whatever part of the state they may travel, they will receive a warm and friendly welcome. On behalf of the people of the state of New York, I heartily bid you all welcome.
Thank you, Governor. Sir Lewis Beale, Commissioner General of His Majesty's Government in the United Kingdom for the New York World's Fair of 1939, has been elected by the Commissioner Generals of all the nations participating in the New York World's Fair to speak to you, Mr. President, and to the peoples of the United States and the world who are listening in on behalf of the 60 nations, Panama and the League of Nations and the Pan-American Union. It's a great pleasure for me to present to you Sir Lewis Beale.
Mr. President, Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, I have the great honor on this memorable occasion commemorating the inauguration 150 years ago of the beloved first President of the United States, from whose great qualities of heart and mind all people have benefited, to speak on behalf of the Foreign Commissioners General to the New York World's Fair, and to say in their name, first, how much we have enjoyed working with you, Mr. President Whalen, and the administrators of the fair, and with all the officials, and how much we have appreciated your cooperation and the spirit of harmony which has prevailed in all our relations. And speaking with even greater emphasis, I must then express the pride and the satisfaction of the nations represented at the fair at being associated with the people of the United States of America in this event of worldwide significance. The President of the United States invited the countries of the world to come to New York to play each their part in this historic parade of national achievement. They have responded with enthusiasm and sincerity to his gracious invitation. There are here represented nearly 60 nations of the world. Every country, deeply sensible of the privilege of participation, is seeking to make, fully and faithfully, a contribution, national and patriotic, it is true, but a contribution worthy of this great occasion, based on friendship and acceptable to the people of this great nation. a contribution which shall play a real and important part in the magnificent international pageant which is now spread before us. The word friendship denotes exactly and faithfully the spirit of foreign participation at the World's Fair. And I am persuaded that the spirit of friendship inspires all who are here responsible for any form of participation and will equally animate all who come as visitors from all quarters of the world. Those of you who have been able to make a tour through the fairgrounds at any time during the past few weeks will have been given a sure promise of a beauty which will gladden the eye and the heart of every visitor. The majestic scale of the fair, the bold conception of its planning, and the masterly execution of the work, both in building and the landscaping, have ensured an outstanding achievement. The fair was designed to show the advancement of human welfare and the creation of a better and more abundant life. And its creators have never faltered in their steadfast purpose of pointing the way to a finer world of the future. In that purpose, the foreign countries participating have joined wholeheartedly, so that, in very truth, the New York World's Fair cannot fail to be an instrument of the highest value in increasing the happiness and the welfare of the people of the world. With our highest esteem, sir, we, the Commissioners General, salute the President and the people of the United States and wish them every success in this great enterprise.
Very early in planning the New York World's Fair, it was necessary for me to visit the President of the United States. In the first place, we could not have had an international fair without the consent and approval of the President. That was given very readily, and after the Congress passed the necessary resolution authorizing the President to invite foreign nations to participate in the World's Fair, our great President was kind enough to sit down and do a great deal of planning. And some of the very fine features of the federal building are those that were put on a piece of paper by the President of the United States. Anytime we ever asked him for assistance, he always gave it to us. And it's a great privilege for me to tell you that the President of the United States has been one of our great friends, whose encouragement and whose advice has made possible this great project. I have the great honor to present to you the President of the United States, Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Governor Lehman, Mayor LaGuardia, President Grover Whalen, ladies and gentlemen, I have seen only a small fraction of the fair, but even on what I have seen, I am able to congratulate all of you who conceived the fair and planned the fair, and all you men and women who built the fair. From henceforth in our history, the 30th day of April will have a dual significance. the inauguration of the first President of the United States, which began the executive branch of the federal government, and now the opening of the New York World's Fair of 1939. Today also, the cycle of sesquicentennial commemorations is complete. 2 years ago in Philadelphia and other communities was celebrated the Constitutional Convention of 1787, that convention that gave us the form of government under which we have lived ever since. Last year, we celebrated in many places throughout the country the ratification of the Constitution by the original 13 states. On March 4th of this year, the first meeting of the first Congress was commemorated at a distinguished gathering in the House of Representatives in the National Capitol. And 2 weeks ago, on April 14th, I went to Mount Vernon with my cabinet in memory of that day exactly 150 years before when General Washington was formally notified of his election as president. As you will remember, 2 days later, he left that home he loved so well and proceeded by easy stages to New York, greeted with triumphal arches and flower-strewn streets in the large communities through which he passed on his way to this city. Fortunately, there have been preserved for us many generations later the accounts of his taking of the oath of office on April 30th on the balcony of Old Federal Hall. In a sense, in a scene of Republican simplicity and surrounded by the great men of his time, most of whom had served with him in the cause of independence throughout the Revolution, the oath was administered to him by the Chancellor of the State of New York, Robert R. Livingston. And so, we in New York have a very personal connection with that 30th of April, 150 years ago. The permanent government of the United States had become a fact. The period of revolution and the critical days that followed were over. The long future lay ahead. In the framework of government which had been devised, and in the early days, the early years of its administration, it is worthwhile that we should remember today that those early leaders successfully planned for such use of the Constitution as would fit the Constitution to a constantly expanding nation. That the original framework was capable of expansion from its application to 13 states with less than 4 million people to its newer application to 48 states with more than 130 million people, that is the best tribute that we can give to the vision of the fathers. In this, it stands unique in the whole history of all the world, because no other form of government has remained unchanged so long and has seen at the same time any comparable expansion of population or of area. And it is significant that the astounding changes and advances in almost every phase of human life have made necessary so relatively few changes in the Constitution itself. All of the earlier amendments may be accepted by us, as a part of the original Constitution, because that sacred Bill of Rights, which guaranteed and has maintained personal liberty through freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, and freedom of assembly, was already popularly accepted by the inhabitants of the 13 states while the Constitution itself was in the process of ratification. There followed the amendments that put an end to the practice of human slavery and a number of later amendments that made our practice of government more direct, including, as we're glad today, the extension of the franchise to the women of the nation. And we remember also that the only restrictive amendment which deliberately took away one form of holy personal liberty was, after a trial, an unhappy trial of a few years, overwhelmingly repealed. Only once has the permanence of the Constitution been threatened. Threatened by an internal war brought about principally by the very fact of the expansion of American civilization across the continent, a threat that resulted eventually and happily in a closer union than ever before. And of these later years, these very recent years, the history books of the next generation will set it forth that sectionalism and regional jealousies have diminished. The people of every part of our land have acquired a national solidarity of economic and social thought such as we have never seen before. That has been accomplished. That it has been done has been due first to our form of government itself, and secondly to a spirit of wise tolerance, which with few exceptions has been our American rule. We in the United States, and indeed in all the Americas, North America, Central America, and South America, we remember that our population stems from many races and kindreds and tongues. Often, I think, we Americans offer up a silent prayer that on the continent of Europe, from which the American hemisphere was principally colonized, the years to come will break down many barriers to intercourse between nations, barriers which may be historic, but which so greatly through all the centuries have led to strife and have hindered friendship and normal intercourse. The United States stands today as a completely homogeneous nation, similar in its civilization from coast to coast and from north to south, united in a common purpose to work for the greatest good of the greatest number, united in the desire to move forward to better things in the use of its great resources of nature and its even greater resources of intelligent, educated manhood and womanhood, united in its desire to encourage peace and goodwill among all the nations of the earth. Born of that unity of purpose, that knowledge of strength, that singleness of ideal, two great expositions, one at each end of our continent, mark this year in which we live. And it is fitting that they commemorate the 150th anniversary of the birth of our permanent government. Opened 2 months ago, the exposition on the Magic Island in San Francisco Bay presents to visitors from all the world a view of the amazing development of our own far west and of our neighbors of the American continent and the nations of the Pacific and its isles. Here, at the New York World's Fair of 1939, many nations are also represented. Indeed, most, the overwhelming majority of all the nations of the world. And the theme is the world of tomorrow. This general, and I might almost say spontaneous, participation by other countries is a gesture of friendship and goodwill toward the United States, for which I render most grateful thanks. It is not through the physical exhibits alone that this gesture has manifested itself. The magic of modern communications makes possible a continuing participation by word of mouth itself. Already on Sunday afternoon radio programs, no fewer than 17 foreign nations have shown their goodwill to this country since the 1st of January this year. In many instances, the chiefs of state of these nations who have taken part in the programs, have spoken, and in every case, the principal speaker has extended greetings to the President of the United States. And so in this place, and at this time, as we open the New York World's Fair, I desire to thank all of them and to assure them that we as a nation heartily reciprocate all of their cordial sentiments. All who come to this World's Fair in New York and to the exposition in San Francisco will, I need not tell them, receive the heartiest of welcomes. They will find that the eyes of the United States are fixed on the future. Yes, our wagon is still hitched to a star. But it is a star of friendship, a star of progress for mankind, a star of greater happiness and less hardship, a star of international goodwill, and above all, a star of peace. May the months to come carry us forward in the rays of that eternal hope. And so, my friends, the time has come for me to announce, with solemnity perhaps, but with great happiness, a fact. I hereby dedicate the World's Fair, the New York World's Fair of 1939, and I declare it open to all mankind.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have heard the President of the United States formally open the New York World's Fair of 1939.